This evening, we're gonna be talking about Botkin. I thought I would talk about the eight verses of mind training, which is a text that is taught a lot and practiced a lot, and it when you hear it, it makes you go, no way. Yeah, what he's at, you know, what the author is asking of me is absolutely too much. This is crazy. But, you know, considering that the Dharma has to be the opposite of what we've been doing so far, because what we've been doing so far has kept us very snugly in cyclic existence. So we need to do something quite different than what we've been doing and think in a very different way if we're going to attain liberation or awakening. So are any of you familiar with the ages of mind training? No. Okay, well, let me read them so that you can gasp. And then we'll go back and start at the beginning and I'll explain them, okay? Okay, so verse 1, with the thought of attaining awakening for the welfare of all beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I will constantly practice holding them dear. That one's manageable. Whenever I am with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all, and from the very depths of my heart, I will respectfully hold others as supreme. What do you think about that one? In all actions, I will examine my mind, and the moment a disturbing attitude arises, endangering myself and others, I will firmly confront and avert it. That was okay. Whenever I meet a person of bad nature who is overwhelmed by destructive energy and intense suffering, I will hold such a rare one dear as if I had found a precious treasure. When others, out of jealousy, mistreat me with abuse, slander, and so on, I will practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to them. What? When someone I have benefited and in whom I have placed great trust hurts me very badly, I will practice seeing that person as my supreme teacher. We'll see. In short, I will offer directly and indirectly every benefit and happiness to all beings, my mothers. I will practice in secret, taking upon myself all their harmful actions and sufferings. Without these practices being defiled by the stains of the eight worldly concerns, and by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, I will practice without grasping to release all beings from the bondage of the disturbing, unsubdued mind and karma. This was written by Langri Tampa, a Tibetan sage, and the thought training teachings are part of a whole genre of teachings that developed in Tibet, beginning in around the 11th century and going on for a few centuries, and they deal very much with practical situations that we encounter and how to transform our mind in those situations into a mind of virtue that creates merit, good karma, and will spur us along the path. So it challenges all of our old habits of doing things. Yeah. So you'll see. Let's start at the beginning, okay? With the thought of attaining awakening for the welfare of all beings, for more precious than a wish fulfilling jewel. I will constantly practice holding them dear. Okay, so the thought of attaining awakening for the welfare of all beings, that thought is called the bodhicitta, or the altruistic intention. Yeah, and it's a mind that has two intentions. One is to be of the greatest benefit to each and every living being, and the second intention is to attain full awakening or Buddhahood in order to do that. Okay, so he starts the eight verses out with the highest, most noble motivation we can ever have, you know, being of the greatest benefit to all sentient beings. Okay, and so how are we going to, you know, accomplish that? We have to hold, to see them as more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel and constantly practice holding them. So in ancient culture, they had this idea of a wish-fulfilling jewel that, you know, was somewhere in the ocean, and the sailors would go out, and if they found it, then anything they wished for, they could ask, and it would come about. So here it's saying that all sentient beings, in other words, all living beings with minds who are not Buddhas, who are not fully awakened, that these are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel. Okay, so that means other living beings are more precious than money, yeah, than, you know, our reputation, our praise, our job, our entertainments, you know, that other living beings have been very kind to us and precious, and are precious in that way, and so we should try and hold them dear. Yeah. So that doesn't sound too bad when we first hear it. Oh yes, I can hold my parents fairly dear, except on a few occasions. I can hold my spouse dear. I held him dear when I first met him. Now it's a little bit harder, but yeah, I can manage that. And then you come to Donald Trump. Yeah, and I have to hold Donald Trump dear, like a wish-fulfilling jewel. I don't think so. You know, I don't want to hold him dear. And then we rattle off a lot of, you know, epithets for Donald Trump. Not the nice kind of epithets, the cuss word ones. Okay? So it really, you know, this really puts us right in front of our tendency to divide people into three categories. Friends, you know, people who are kind to us, who we're attached to. Enemies, which doesn't necessarily mean, you know, ISIS and Jihadi John. It could mean anybody we disagree with or don't like. People that we just have aversion to. And then strangers who haven't affected us one way or another, and so we don't really care about them. Okay? So we tend to divide living beings into these three groups and relate to them according to the group that we put them in. Okay? Now, we think that when we look at other living beings, that we're seeing them accurately, and that how we differentiate them into friend, enemy, stranger is accurate. Okay? Now, think of a person who you're really attached to, who you're very, very fond of, who you respect a lot. Okay? Think of someone. Now, does everybody in the world respect that person and love them as much as you do? Or do some people in the world think that person's a jerk? Which is it?
The last one.
The last one, isn't it? Yeah. But we're so sure that our way of seeing somebody is correct because they're objectively a really wonderful person. But if that were true, then why do other people not like them? Well, we usually say it's because the other people are stupid. Yeah, that's their problem. However, yeah, once in a while does it happen that the person you're very attached to, that you cherish so much, goes into the enemy camp? Yeah? I mean, you have a big fight with somebody. Even if you basically care for them, when you have a big fight, at that time, they're in the enemy camp, aren't they? Yeah? So something, you know, the way we're looking at the situation isn't matching the reality. We're thinking, when that person's in the friend camp, that from their side, unrelated to us, they have these wonderful qualities. Now, if that were so, from their side, objective, you know, if that were so, then everybody should see them in the same way. And they don't. And also, if it were so, we should always see that person as wonderful and feel close and attached to them. But that doesn't happen either. Okay, so we have to begin to question how we compartmentalize people, because something isn't matching up here. Okay, now let's look at the enemy category. Okay, similarly, the people we don't like, the people who have harmed us, who interfere with our happiness, who criticize us, who abuse us, who don't appreciate us. Can you imagine that? Somebody who doesn't appreciate me. I'm so wonderful, and somebody doesn't appreciate me. Yeah? Don't we think like this? Do you have that thought somewhere in your mind? Yeah, I have certain rules of the universe. Yeah, maybe you do too. You check up. My first rule of the universe is everyone has to like me. Yeah, people are not allowed to dislike me. Yeah, that violates the first principle of the universe. Okay? The second principle of the universe is everybody has to agree with what I think. Because what I think is true. Why? Because I think it. And even if I change my mind tomorrow, the new thing I think is true and the old one is false. Okay? So everybody should realize that my ideas are really good and that the world should conform with my ideas. Do you have that thought somewhere in your mind? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, as a result, I have lots of advice for other people about how they could improve, so that the world would live in a peace and harmony. Of course, it's according to my version of peace and harmony, which means everybody has to like me and do what I want. Okay. So all these people who are enemies, they just don't get it. You know, they're so stupid. They don't understand that my way is the right way of doing things, and that they should immediately follow it. Yeah? And they should appreciate me. Yeah? And these people in the enemy category, they break the rules of the universe. Because they don't think I'm wonderful. These sentient beings. What are you supposed to do? Okay? So I'm thinking that objectively, you know, these people in the enemy camp are horrible, despicable, stupid people. Objective, it has nothing to do with my opinions. From their side, they're like that. Now, do some of the people you can't stand, do other people love them? Yeah. Can you imagine that Trump has supporters? I mean, what kind of people in their right mind would support Trump? But there's a lot of people who think he's great. Osama bin Laden, a lot of people loved him. Yeah? The person, think of the person who's been the meanest to you in your whole life. Other people think that person's spectacular. Yeah? So again, something isn't matching up with our concrete view of other people, which is that they exist like that, out there, objectively, unrelated to me. Okay? And then, of course, the strangers, you know, they're just the people who clutter the sidewalk and the road when I'm trying to get somewhere. So I try and go around them. So, they're not too bad, unless they cut me off on the road. Then they go from being stranger into the enemy camp. Yeah. If they stop and they let me cut into their lane, then they go into the friend camp. Okay? But otherwise, I don't really care much about them. Until I meet them, and then they affect me one way or the other, and then I put them either in friend or enemy. Okay. So, again, we're seeing some things that are not supporting our view that people are objectively good and bad and nice and mean. Yeah. What we're seeing, one, is that people change camps. Friend, enemy, stranger? Yeah, strangers become friends, other strangers become enemies. Friends, we lose touch with them, they become strangers. Sometimes our friends become enemies. Our enemies, we meet them in a different situation, they become friends. Other enemies we lose touch with, they become strangers. So all this changing, yeah, is the, you know, if people were objective, friends, strangers, and enemies, they couldn't change categories like this. Okay, so something is wrong with the way we're seeing sentient beings. Okay, another thing that we notice in looking like this is that the people go into friend, enemy, and stranger camp based on what criteria? What's the criteria for categorizing them? Yeah. It's how they treat me. Isn't it? If they treat me well, they go in the friend camp. If they treat my enemy well, Same behavior. But if it's not towards me and it's towards my enemy, then they go in the enemy camp. Okay? If somebody mistreats me, they're in the enemy camp. But if they mistreat somebody I can't stand, wonderful person. Okay? So we're judging sentient beings based on the idea of me, center of the universe. You finally met the center of the universe. Except the problem is, you think you're the center of the universe. And that's why we have so many problems. Because you need to recognize that I am the center of the universe, not you. Okay? So, can you see this play out in your life with the people that you encounter? Yeah? It's really true, isn't it? And we get into so many problems with other living beings because of our outlook, which when we realize what our outlook is, we see that we're the foolish ones, not the enemy. You know, that it's our mind that is not seeing things properly. Yeah? That we're not seeing sentient beings as they are. We're distorting them. Okay, so what's a better way to train our mind to see other living beings so that we can see them like wish-fulfilling jewels and see them as precious and see them as kind? Okay, so there's a couple of different meditations on kindness that come in the Buddha's teachings, and I find them very, very helpful, you know? And if you really do these meditations often, your whole view of other people changes. Yeah. So one of the meditations is seeing all sentient beings as like our parents. Okay. They usually say like the mother, because the mother is so involved in the child and bearing the child. But we have gender equality nowadays. Yeah? So the guys are doing the dishes, aren't you? Are you doing the dishes, guys? Yeah? 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 So if we have gender equality, then we need to include the fathers in here too. The kindness of the fathers. Okay, not just the mothers. Okay, now some people are going to say, well, wait a minute, you don't know my mother and father. Yeah. Other people's mothers and fathers are really nice. My mother and father, yeah. Yeah, they were overpowering, they controlled me, they interfere in business, they expect too much out of me, they criticize me for things that I did well, they let me down, on and on and on and on. I mean, ever since Freud, he gave us total permission to blame our parents for all of our problems. Yeah, do you think that's fair? I don't think it's fair. Yeah, because when we look, yeah, our parents actually did a lot for us. Right? First of all, they had us. Yeah, my mother said it hurt so much when she gave birth to me that she's glad she forgot it, otherwise she wouldn't have had my brother. Yeah? So, you know, they put up with the pain of childbirth. Then, how many of you were parents?
Yeah, fair number.
Okay, how do you sleep during the first few years of your child's life?
Sleep.
You don't sleep, do you? No, you're up at all hours of the day and night to feed this baby who cries. Yeah, you try and get the baby on a schedule. The baby just cries whenever it feels like it. Yeah, and you gotta get up in the middle of the night and feed it. And that's what our parents did for us. Did you ever think about that? You know, that they got up in the middle of the night to feed us? Yeah, if we do think about it, we usually say, well, that's their job. And I didn't ask to be born anyway. You had me, so you signed up for it. But the fact is that we wouldn't have this life, and we wouldn't have the opportunity to practice the Buddha's teachings if our parents had not given us this body, and if they had not protected us when we were little. Because when we were born, there was no way we could take care of ourselves. Yeah, we couldn't even roll over by ourselves or feed ourselves or clean ourselves or anything. Yeah. So if it wasn't our parents who took care of us, it might have been our grandparents. It might have been foster parents. It might have been people in an orphanage. But somebody cared about us. Because if other beings didn't care about us, if they hadn't had been kind, we would have died in the first few years of our life. Yeah, no way we could survive ourselves. Okay? So just the fact that we survived until now, when we look, indicates that we've been the recipient of a tremendous amount of kindness. So they not only kept us alive and kept us from swallowing rat poison and sticking our fingers in the electric plugs. Yeah. Do you have stories that your parents told you from when you were little about all the things you did, that how you almost killed yourself and set the house on fire? Yeah. But they weathered all of that and they kept us alive. And they made sure that we got an education, starting with learning how to talk. Okay? Now imagine if the people who cared for you when you were young did not teach you how to talk. What kind of life would you have now? Okay? What about if they didn't teach you how to read and write? What would your life be like? What about if they didn't potty train you? Okay? Or teach us how to tie our shoes? Yeah. There's all these basic skills that we didn't know when we were born and other people taught us. So it's quite a meditation to really, you know, start back from when you were an infant and think of all the things that other people had to do to keep you alive and to give you an education. Yeah, however many years of education we had, we didn't come out of our mother's womb with that education. Other people, out of the goodness of their heart, taught us. Yeah. We weren't naturally talented. You may have a special talent or whatever, but we only can use that talent now because somebody else encouraged us and taught us how to use it. Then,
support ourselves now.
Yeah. I mean, somehow, throughout our lives, there was always the material things that we needed to survive. Because otherwise, if there weren't, we wouldn't have lived. We wouldn't have survived. Okay? But now we feel like, well, I earn my own money.
Yeah. So how are other sentient beings kind?
I run my own life.
I earn my own money. Okay? In fact, look at my bank account. Have you ever noticed that your bank account, the important numbers are how many zeros you have? The first number, it doesn't really matter what it is. The important number is how many zeros follow that first number. Okay? Now, when we were born, did you have any, you know, did we have any money? If you think you have financial problems now, when we were born broke. Yeah, 100% broke. Zero. Okay. All the money we have now, all the material possessions we have now, came from other living beings. Even if we think, well, I earned them, I worked. But other people were kind to give us the job, and they are kind to pay us. Yeah, throughout history, there's a lot of people who worked hard and didn't get any pay. So when we really look at our life in this way, yeah, it's just remarkable. How much kindness we've received. You know, direct kindness from people who have taken care of us and given us things. Okay. Then there's also the kindness that we receive from strangers. Okay. How many of you stop and thank the road workers when you drive by? Highway repair. Anybody stop and thank them? One person, good.
Well, I was just thinking one time that it could actually be funny to say to the garbage man, thank you very much, and just to see his reaction, because probably no one has ever said that.
Yeah.
You take them for granted.
We take them very much for granted. I was in Tel Aviv once when the garbage collectors went on strike. That really makes you appreciate the garbage collectors. They are very precious. Yeah? Can you imagine if nobody collected your garbage? Okay. How about the people who work on the telephones, electricity? Yeah. Do we stop and thank them? No, we just take them for granted. The people working on the highway at 2 o'clock in the morning, we just take them for granted. Yeah, they should work in the middle of the night, because if they work in the daytime, it disturbs me. But wow, what they give up to make the roads that we drive on. The people who plant the food we eat, the people who harvest it, who ship it, who practice it, who cook it. And if you eat meat, the people who offer their body to you for lunch. Would you offer your body to somebody else for lunch? No way. Yet if you eat meat, you're eating somebody's body. And they gave up their life for that. Do we appreciate that? Do we think of benefiting that being in return in some way? Or do we just say, you know, I want my steak or shrimp or whatever it is you want. Okay, so this is actually a huge meditation. I'm just touching little bits of it. But if you spend time thinking about how much we are dependent on other living beings, it's just astounding. Now, our mind is going to say, we're going to say, yes, but. Yeah, we always hear this. Yes, but. They didn't do it just for me. They did it to earn a paycheck for their family. Their motivation doesn't matter. They don't have to do something especially for us in order to be kind. The definition here of kindness is that we benefited from what they did. We benefited from what they did. And if it wasn't in this life, then
previous lives.
We're in a different kind of relationship to them. They benefited us then. And especially now, we are so interconnected across the planet. Here are a lot of the things you use made in China. Do you ever imagine what the people who look like, you know, what the people who make the transistors or the
silicon or, I don't know, all these different computer parts, for example,
or parts to your phone, what these people look like? Are they young? Are they old? Are they in good health? Are they paid fair wages? Are they happy? Do they like their job? Do you think about the lives of the people who make the things that we use and think about their kindness? I mean, all of us now are either sitting in a chair or sitting on a mat. Think for a minute how many people and animals were involved in producing what you're sitting on. It's astounding when you think of it.
I don't know. This is, what do you call this material?
Some of it bamboo or?
I don't know. But anyway,
somebody planted it and harvested it. Somebody designed the chair.
They bent the material. They wove this together.
Somebody put it in, I don't know, a ship or a truck. This probably wasn't made in Denmark, do you think?
No.
So made in some other country, and it had to be transported here. So where did the vehicle come from that this chair was transported in? Other people had to make the vehicle, and other people still made the roads. And other people put this chair on the vehicle, or the train, or the ship. And then somebody drove the vehicle, somebody unloaded it. Somehow it found its way to Denmark. And then somebody here either bought it or gave it to the center. And that's just a short list of the number of beings involved. But when you think about it, and that's just for the chair. Okay. If we start thinking about the building that we're sitting in, the plumbers, the electricians, the engineers, the construction workers, the loggers, it's astounding how many sentient beings' efforts we depend on just for to use something that we hardly even notice and usually take for granted. So when you think like this, then we begin to see that it's not just our friends and relatives who have been kind to us, but strangers have been immensely kind to us.
And we should really appreciate them, whether we know them or not. So instead of seeing them as strangers who I just have to navigate my way around to get where I'm going, to look at the people on the street, the people in the traffic jam with you, yeah, the people you're scrunched up with in the bus, you know, that these are all sentient beings who have been kind to me in one way or another and have benefited me. And like I said, if you practice this a lot, the way you look at other beings begins to shift. Yeah? And your attitude and your way of acting towards other beings shifts. Okay. Now you're going to say, yeah, okay. Maybe, you know, friends are kind, maybe strangers are, but enemies, forget it. Forget it, no way. Okay, now, here's a way to look at to think of enemies as kind. So, we've all been through difficulties, right? Yeah. And we usually see the difficulties as the fault of external circumstances and external people. Why am I unhappy? Because my brother did this, and my sister did that, and my parents did or didn't do that, and my husband, wife did this, and even my pet frog, you know, disturbs my happiness. And then, of course, you know, there's Trump. But then, you know, we've all been through difficulties with other people, and we've all survived those difficulties. We're still alive, right? Still alive. We survived those difficulties. When you look back on the things that you suffered the most from in your life, did you grow in some important way from having gone through that suffering? Yeah, was the person who, you know, when somebody betrayed your trust or lied to you or cheated you or who knows what, did you grow in some important way through having gone through that experience? Did you find resources in yourself that you didn't know you had? Did you find other people who helped you and you didn't even know about them before? Did you gain some kind of wisdom to be able to assess your behavior and other people's behavior in a better way? When we look through the difficult situations we've been through, yeah, we've grown because of them. Yeah. So if we look at it that way, that we've found talents or we were forced to develop abilities that we hadn't developed before by being in these difficult situations, then in some way we have to say that the person who harmed us actually benefited us. Yeah? When I look at some of the difficulties I've been through in my life, yeah, especially the ones where I just was furious with other people for how they treated me, I have to say, in each of these situations, I had to grow up. Yeah? I had to grow up. I had to find resources in myself. I had to learn how to let go of my anger,
how to forgive others. Yeah, how not to take things for granted. When I really look at my difficult situations, which I won't bore you with by telling you the details, but if you ask, because it's all about me, I'm happy to talk about my problems all day and all night. You know, but if I look, then I have to, in some way or another, say thank you to the people who harmed me. Because I would not be the person that I am now. I would not have been able to do in my life what I've done now if it hadn't been for the people who harmed me, who made me grow up. Yeah? So if you look at it that way, even our enemies have been kind. We've benefited from them. Okay, so there's this whole way of thinking about the kindness of sentient beings again and again and again and again. And as we do, especially seeing how interdependent we are with them, then automatically a feeling of appreciation for others comes in our mind. A feeling of being the recipient of great kindness comes, and the wish to repay that kindness comes. Okay. So when that kind of thing arises in our mind, then, yeah, we can see all sentient beings as more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel. Another way that they are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, not only because they keep us alive and help us materially and so on, but also if we want to become fully awakened Buddhas, we have to generate that bodhicitta motivation, that aspiration for full awakening, in order to benefit each and every sentient being, omitting none. Okay? So that means that our awakening, our spiritual awakening, depends on each and every sentient being. Which means that we have that sentient being, just through their existence, is being kind to us because our spiritual awakening depends on them. Okay. So, I haven't seen one cockroach in Denmark. Yeah. Do you not have cockroaches
yes.
here? You don't have cockroaches.
Yes. Okay. Some places.
Yeah.
Very rare. Almost not.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, what kind of bugs do you have that you don't like? Do you have mosquitoes?
Yes.
Okay, mosquitoes. Yeah. That means our spiritual awakening depends on each mosquito. Because if we leave even one sentient being outside the realm of our seeing them as kind and precious, then we do not have the bodhicitta motivation. We cannot attain full awakening. Okay. So every grasshopper, every mosquito, even dear Donnie, we have to appreciate, yeah, our awakening depends on them. Okay. So that really pushes us, that really stretches us, and we realize that we can't hold on to this regimented view that we've had of friend, enemy, and stranger, seeing people as good and bad objectively from their own side. We have to completely release that because it doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah. So do you see how this involves training our mind to see things in a very different way than we've seen them until now? Yeah. Our usual way of seeing things, of acting towards people, just won't do. It doesn't match reality. And it impedes us on our spiritual path. And it also makes us unhappy right now. Because the more we focus on how much other beings have harmed us and how disagreeable they are, the more unhappy we are right now. Okay. Put it this way. When you think of the people that you can't stand, are you happy? Yeah. When you think of the people you're mad at, are you happy? Does anger make you happy? Is it conducive for human happiness? Yeah. When you wake up in the morning and you're in a bad mood, do you say, oh, fantastic, I feel so good? Yeah. Anger doesn't benefit human happiness at all. Okay. So, you know, we begin to learn to release the anger. To change the way we see people so that instead of picking their faults, we see their good qualities, we see their kindness. Yeah. Because faults are easy to pick in everybody except ourselves. Unless it's one of those days when we're really down on ourselves and then everything's our fault. So we go, regarding ourselves, we go from, I am fantastic, how dare anybody find a fault or criticize me, to, I am the worst thing in the world and I messed everything up. Yeah, there's very little gray area in the way we look at ourselves. But we really begin to see that we have to change our attitude towards others. And we also have to change our attitude towards ourselves, too. Because if we are intent on picking at our own faults, yeah, then we will, and if we're expert at picking at our own faults, then we will be just as expert at picking at the faults of other living beings. And that just makes us basically unhappy. So instead of having our microscope out, looking at every small thing everybody did, waiting to criticize it, so that we could somehow say we're better than them, it makes more sense for our own happiness to look at people's good qualities and to look at what they have done for us. Yeah. So that's this first verse. Any questions about this verse before we go on to verse 2? Anything?
Is Tonglen, is it also one practice to use to better manage this? Yeah. To see other people as precious.
What did you say?
Tonglen. Is it also one of the meditations?
Yeah. Meditation? We have to do this meditation on the kindness of others in order to do the taking and giving, the Tonglen meditation.
Okay.
If we don't see sentient beings as kind, there's no way we're going to want to take their suffering and give them our happiness. Yeah? And this is a foundation, but it's hard, isn't it? It's very hard.
But this...
Yeah?
This verse, doesn't it, some actions it's reject, some hash actions it rejects or not, the killing is of the...
Oh, sure, yeah. So seeing sentient beings as kind doesn't mean we have to approve of everything they do.
Exactly.
Okay? So the person and the action are two different things. Yeah? We can say the action is harmful, you know, and the action needs to stop. But the person who did it, yeah, still has the Buddha nature and can become a fully awakened Buddha. We can't say that the person is hopeless.
So you would never say it was right to kill this particular person?
No.
Because it is, because this person may be about to kill thousands or millions, then instead another person might kill this person.
Okay, so there's stories about this, you know. But if you're going to do that, yeah, you have to be very sure that you have clairvoyant powers and you know what that person is going to do. It's very easy to look back after World War II and say, oh, somebody should have taken out Trump. But before, you know, unless we have clairvoyant powers, and, you know, to, if we can really know this person's going to kill a million people or a few million people, then fine, you know. And if you're willing to take the karmic result of killing upon yourself, okay? But otherwise, it's a little bit dicey. Especially, you know, knowing how our mind can create enemies when people do what we don't like. Okay? Because otherwise, everybody knows somebody that they're sure is going to kill somebody or do something horrible. So that would justify everybody killing everybody. It's not a good idea.
I read about a specialist in philosophy, and he tells us that it's only the only way you can be yourself is to get into people you don't know that well. If you don't know a person, you can be yourself easier than if you know a person. It's interesting, I think. When you meet a person, you say, how can I get power? Get the power of this person. What can I get from this person? It's easier to meet a person you don't know that well. I don't know you that well, so I can tell you everything.
I'm a little confused. I don't understand this theory that you're saying that you can be yourself with people you don't know.
Yeah.
What does be yourself mean?
It's easier to talk to you than to my mother. That's how it is.
Yeah, but I'm sure that there's other people you find it easier to talk to than me.
I don't know.
I don't really have a comment for that. Should we go on to verse 2? Verse 2 is a real button pusher. Whenever I'm with others, okay? So far, so good. Whenever I'm with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all. What? I'm the lowest of all. Excuse me, but if there's a line, a buffet line for food, I want to go at the beginning of the line. And if there's limited places to sit, I want a chair. Yeah? And if I'm in a meeting and there's somebody who treats me like I'm low, I don't like that one single bit. And just try and boss me around and I'm going to let you know what I think about that. Isn't that the way we react? Yeah? Whenever I am with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all. Really? I'm the best of all. I deserve happiness first. My happiness is the most important. Isn't that what we say? You know, I mean, after all, I'm the center of the universe. So my happiness is the most important. Then the happiness of the people that make me happy. And everybody else, just, you know. Isn't that how we think? I'm not the lowest of all. Don't treat me like rubbish. Yeah. Why can't you talk comfortably with your mother? She treats me like I'm 6 years old. Like I'm the lowest of all. Yeah. I remember my grandma telling my dad to remember to put on a jacket when my dad was in his 60s. She didn't want him to catch cold. Yeah. So somebody's going to treat me, I will see myself as the lowest of all. Yeah. Do you want to do that? Hello?
Yeah.
No, we don't want to do that. It's fine if other people see themselves as the lowest of all, because then they'll do what I want, and I can boss them around. But I'm not going to see myself as the lowest of all. So what is this Buddhist dude telling me to do? This is crazy. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? Whenever I am with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all. And from the very depths of my heart, so not just through words, but really meaning it in here, I will respectfully hold others as supreme. I will respectfully hold others as supreme. I'm not going to hold them supreme because I'm supposed to. Because I ought to, because they're threatening me, because they have more power than me. Yeah? I'm not holding them supreme because of those reasons, but I'm holding them supreme respectfully, really honoring them, and seeing myself as the lowest. Do you do that very often? Yeah.
My teacher, yes.
Yeah, maybe with our teacher. Until our teacher pushes our buttons. Yeah. When our teacher's nice to us, then we see ourselves lower. But when our teacher tells us to do something we don't want to do, has your teacher ever told you to do something you don't want to do?
No, but he told me something I don't like. Mm. But I still see him higher than me.
Mm. Yeah. So you might still see him higher than you. Yeah. But it takes a good amount of faith to do that. Yeah. Faith.
Faith. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And 100% faith is not always so easy. Yeah.
Do not choose.
Yeah. What about other people besides your teacher?
Not the same.
Not the same.
But I would like one day I can see them like I see my teacher.
Yeah. It would be nice, wouldn't
yeah.
it?
Yes.
Yeah. And seeing them as high and ourselves as low doesn't mean we lose our self-esteem. And it doesn't mean that we grovel on the floor to gain other people's approval. Okay? And it doesn't mean that we just let anybody have power over us. Okay? But it's an attitude that if we go into situations with a humble attitude, it creates the space to really have a good relationship with somebody. How many of you like arrogant people? Yeah. Arrogant people are a drag, aren't they? We don't like them at all. Similarly, when we are arrogant, yeah, when we puff ourselves up and think we're special and powerful and supreme, then other people feel the same way about us as we feel about arrogant people, because we've now joined the group of arrogant people. Mm-hmm. If people come in, and just people you meet, and they're kind of low-key, cooperative, they're not, like I said, they're not groveling on the floor. They're not people-pleasers. But they're extremely cooperative. And they don't insist on getting their way. They listen to your ideas. They build on your ideas. Yeah. They help when they can, after you ask them for help. Those people, it's much easier to get along with, isn't it? The Tibetans have a saying that the green grass grows in the valleys, not on the peaks of mountains. Okay? So the green grass of good qualities grows with a person who is humble, but not with a person who is arrogant, who thinks they're the best in the world. And yet, in our modern society, we are taught and encouraged to toot our own horn. American expression. But we're taught to brag about ourselves and let people know our good qualities. When you go in for a job interview, you don't reveal your weaknesses, your faults, and your mistakes. You even pretend to have skills that you don't have. Or you say, I know a little bit, but I'm a quick learner. But we're always, and we're encouraged by the society to really make ourselves look good and to sell ourselves like we're product. Yeah? Especially with job interviews. Yeah, I've got to sell myself so that they buy me to work for the company. We do it the same way when we meet people, too. Yeah, if there's somebody we want to impress, we show our such a nice way of being with that person. Yeah? We want to impress them. And then as soon as we're not with them, then we just act any old way. You spoke about respecting your teacher and seeing your teacher inside. I've seen over and over again, and I have to admit it, to doing it myself too. True confession time. When we're with our teachers, we're such good practitioners. Very humble, low-spoken, respectful, cooperative, you know, very kind. Yeah, we'll do anything for our teachers. Let me take those dirty dishes. You know, oh, you want tea? It's fine, I'll make you tea. You know, oh, you want this done specially? Yes, I will do that. Okay? So we're like that with our Dharma teachers and with people that we like. Yeah? Then, how are we with everybody else? The Dharma teacher, which is like this with, how are we with the other disciples? Hey, you, set up the meditation hall. Come on, you're late. Why are you making tea? The guru asked me to make tea. I'm making the tea. Get out of here. Yeah. No, I don't want to wash the dishes in the Dharma Center. I am washing the teacher's dishes. I will not wash the dishes of the students. Yeah? Okay. So, again, something's wrong, isn't it? Yeah. You think we're being a little bit fake? Yeah. Maybe a little bit fake? There's stories of some of that. Who was it? Pacho Rinpoche. And he was a great lama. He wrote this fantastic book called Words of My Precious Teacher. Yeah, I really recommend it. And he didn't like when everybody paid lots of attention to him. Yeah. So he ditched his disciples. I think I'm telling the right story. I think it was about him. Somebody correct me if it was about another yogi. So he went away from his disciples, and he took a job in old Tibet as the servant in one household. Yeah, and served and was happy, and the people in the house just treated him like a servant. You know, they had no idea that he was a great spiritual mentor. So they treated him like a servant. And then one day, I hope I got... So this story is true. I'm not sure if it was Pacho Rinpoche, but anyway, they were going, the family was going somewhere for some teaching. You know, they were expecting some high lama. And Pacho Rinpoche was coming along. The yogi who, the Dharma teacher who was acting like the servant, was following along. The owner of the house. And all the people are lined up on the side of the road. Yeah? Kind of like this with their scarves and, you know, oh, here comes the teacher. And the household owner, you know, was going, wow, these people are really respecting me, you know? And then it came out that they were actually respecting the teacher that they didn't know was the teacher they thought was their servant. Okay? Yeah. So, you know, this verse is very much about, you know, being humble and not, you know, putting ourselves out there, look at me, I'm the best of all, whatever our field is, you know, instead of trashing all the other people in the field. Learning to comment on their good qualities. Yeah. Learning, you know, whatever good qualities they have, learning to praise them. So it's a different mental state than we usually have. It's a mental state that, you know what it is? It's a mental state with self-confidence. Because when we have self-confidence, we can be humble. We don't have to make ourselves look good. When we don't have self-confidence, that's when we puff ourselves up and act like we're big wigs and try and impress people. But when we really believe in ourselves, we don't have to do that. One time, His Holiness was at a conference. One of you know when this was? It was the year he won the Nobel Peace Prize, and he was in California. And when he heard of it, and he was on a panel of experts at a conference with a big audience. And, you know, I sat in the audience, and somebody asked His Holiness a question. You know, what do you think about? Yeah. And in front of all these experts and the whole audience, His Holiness sat there and he went, I don't know. And the room was silent. Yeah. The expert of the experts said, I don't know. Oh my God, who says that at a conference? Yeah? They'd never say, I don't know. And then he turned to the other people on the panel and he said, what do you people think? So he not only said, I don't know, but he showed respect to them and wanted to draw out their ideas. Yeah, this was in Southern California, the land of the fake. The land of the phonies, okay? Yeah? Really, I grew up in Southern California. It is so phony. I got out of there as soon as I could.
So
phony?
Phony?
Acoustic.
Really?
Yeah. It's the land of Hollywood. Everybody, oh, yeah. You know? I mean, you want the Emmys and all the big things, the celebrations for the Hollywood stars, and they all dress up in their tuxedos and their gowns, and they pose on the red carpet, and you know, when their name comes up that they've won something, and they go. Yeah? And there's His Holiness who said, I don't know. So that, I have such a clear memory of this, you know, and a big teaching for me, big teaching, to not have that need to say, but, here I am, listen to me. So this is not saying that we, if there is gender bias or bigotry or racial prejudice and we're on the receiving end of it, that we just stay silent and say, I'm the lowest of all. Yeah? No. When there's discrimination against a class of people, yeah, we can respectfully bring it to somebody's attention. Not yelling and screaming and calling them names, because as soon as you do that, they just dismiss you. Yeah. But in a respectful way saying that. So it doesn't mean that we let ourselves get taken advantage of. Okay. But it does mean that we don't have to be the biggest and best, and we don't have to be the world-honored one. Okay. So there's 8 verses. We did 2 of them tonight. Yeah, we'll see if we can do the other 6 tomorrow night. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah.
I find it very interesting the way that what you spoke of first and about how our ego and we try to like make this cocoon that everybody likes us, and then I was thinking about how there's these insane dictators around the world and they're just doing the same, and it's like so very evident, right? You can really see it. Mm. And then on a much lesser scale we also have that.
Yeah.
But when you see those countries, and then it's really very vivid.
Yeah. And so that's the way we should see it. Whenever we see somebody who we think has faults, instead of going, yeah, they have this fault, yeah, 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 to think, that's how I look when my arrogance takes hold, or that's how I look when my anger is operating, or that's how I look when I'm greedy. And so instead of criticizing the other people, seeing it as, yeah, it's showing me what I look like, and do I really want to be that way? No, I don't want to be that way. Do you want to be Trump? Would you want to be like Trump? I mean, that guy is so unhappy. You never see him smiling. Yeah, you don't. You never do. Yeah. His wife looks miserable. So, you know, say, this is what I look when I act that way. So it makes us more careful with our own behavior.
Yeah, what I miss in this 8 verses is some advice for the other side, because pretending that you're very good is one thing, mm-hmm. but then crumble on the floor is the other one.
Oh, yeah.
And so the first 2 lines of the 2nd verse,
yeah,
basically, for me personally, push me even deeper down. So I don't really...
Yeah. See, when we say they push us deeper down, that's because we're not understanding the meaning correctly. Okay?
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful. That's why I try to explain it a lot, so we don't misinterpret it. Okay? But when we put ourselves down and say, you know, I'm so stupid, I'm so useless, I can't do anything right, I mean, that's extremely self-centered, isn't it? Yeah, it's still all about me. Yeah? Look, we had this event and I did this wrong. And I have problems with my friend because I got angry. And, you know, the whole thing at the office, the project didn't turn out because I blew it. I'm so irresponsible. I'm so terrible. No wonder nobody loves me. Nobody likes me. And I'm really a disaster. Yeah. And that's our self-talk. And we think it's true. So you have to take those things out, and sometimes it's very helpful, write them down, all your self-talk, write it down, and then start at the top with the first sentence and ask yourself if that's true. I can't do anything right. Is that true? Is that true? It's not true. It's not true. Yeah, we have a lot of skills. We can do a lot of things. We excel in certain areas. So sitting there and saying, I can't do anything right, yeah, that's a lie. When we talk about fake news, that's a good example of fake news. Yeah, I can't do anything. So you really have to sit with it. You know, don't just listen to me and then say, oh, that sounds very good, but she doesn't really understand how horrible I am. No. You know, really try this exercise and write it down and go one by one and ask yourself if that is true. Nobody loves me. Really? Really? All those people who commit suicide because they say nobody, they think nobody loves them? And how many people are grieving after they die? Yeah? They kill themselves and say, nobody loves me. And then many people are grieving. Of course, there's people who care about us. Of course. Especially if you have a dog or a cat. But also human beings. Yeah? So sitting there and saying, you know, nobody loves me or I'm unlovable is completely false. Of course there are people who care about us. Yeah? Often we cannot see that. We block it. You know? People think care about us and they think we're wonderful. And then we think they're stupid for thinking like that. We block it. Oh, somebody's kind to me. I better get out of here. I don't deserve it. But that's all part of this self-centered rubbish. Okay?
Talk a little more about maybe some ideas how to work. I think what I think maybe like Permatridon says, like it's very much with the like to see and then to have a warm heart. I think it's like the basis for working with mind training because we are very much denigrating ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think like in the case of all these suicides, is that we feel very much alone and sometimes we actually need someone to maybe be a mirror or just like just put a little light or something in or like attention. But how can, do you have some suggestions how we can work with it?
Well, you know, Mother Teresa had, I don't know if this, you know, effectively the way she handled things was, I feel lonely, give me somebody to love. When we feel lonely, go and look for other people who need love and care about them. Yeah? Because the more we dwell on, I'm lonely, you know, we continue to block other people's affection and we don't even see it. Yeah? The way to deal with it is to come out of ourself and to realize, if I feel lonely, there's so many other people who feel lonely. Can I be a friend to them? Can I reach out and be a friend to somebody else who's lonely? Okay? So often with thought training, the remedy is the exact opposite of what you're doing or the opposite of what you want to do. Because when we're lonely, we want people flooding to us, saying, oh, you're so wonderful, and you're so wonderful, and here's some chocolate, and here's some flowers, and here's tickets to the soccer game, and here's, and you're wonderful. But that's not, you know, really going to solve the problem. Yeah. Because when we feel lonely, our own heart is somehow shut down. What's going to open up our own heart is if we start looking at other people and caring about them. That will open our heart. And that conquers the loneliness. Try it. Okay? Try it.
That's exactly what Lakhay Lama told us by our meeting here. He's from Copenhagen.
Uh-huh.
Told us to open our heart and to concentrate about ourselves, not to go in relations. It's much easier not to go in relations with others. Concentrate on yourself, he told us.
so I'm confused. When somebody says concentrate on yourself,
yeah, it does focus on yourself.
It doesn't mean be selfish.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear it like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember what.
Yeah, when lamas say,
start with yourself.
Start with yourself.
Yes.
They're saying you need to keep good ethical conduct. You need to open your heart to others.
Yeah.
Don't sit there and, you know, focus on yourself means develop your own good qualities and reach out to others. It doesn't mean focus on yourself, I'm so lonely, I'm so terrible, why doesn't the world do something to make me feel better? It doesn't mean that.
But what I understand, don't think that much about what other things.
Yeah.
Concentrate. Take
yeah.
attention.
Yeah, work on improving yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Relax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there someone, if somebody loves you, don't fly. If somebody hates you, don't cry. Stay in the middle.
Yeah. That's what we're aiming for. Not easy, but it's a process of training our mind. And so to train our mind, we have to be able to identify when these incorrect mental states arise, when the afflictions have taken control of our mind, and be able to identify them, and then apply the antidotes. That's why they call it practice the Dharma. Yeah, it isn't called read about the Dharma. It's called practice, and practice implies repetition again and again and again. So it really is it's retraining our mind.
These trainings, are they part of the Lojong?
Yes.
The Mahayana?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what Lojong means mind training.
Yeah. If you translate it. I have such a good book whenever, you know, sometimes I go and it's about Lojong and I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's also translated into Danish. So, but whenever somebody has treated me badly, then it's very good book to go and read because it turns the things to
the That tells us exactly how to change our mind, what to think about.
Yeah. Mm. But so much of our mental, how we are functioning is turning, spinning around, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Do people like me? Was it good that I just said, you know, oh no, I'm so bad, you know. All this spinning and ideas about what other people think.
Yeah.
All the time.
And we totally waste our life with it.
Yeah.
It's a total waste of time. Oh, do they look good?
Yeah.
I look good. Do they like me? Do they not like me? Do I fit in? Maybe I don't fit in. What can I do so I fit in? Not one single thought about how are you? Yeah. I sometimes get emails from people, whole thing, you know, I feel this and this happened and that happened and that happened. Not even one polite sentence that they don't even mean saying how are you. You know, usually when people say how are you, it's just polite, they really aren't interested. But people are so much thinking about themselves they can't even put in something they don't mean. Yeah, like how are you? Yeah. And you can see that self-centered attitude just makes us 100% miserable.
Thought make you sick.
It makes you sick,
yeah.
Sure does. Okay, let's sit quietly for a minute. So think about something you heard this evening so that you can take it home with you and practice it and put it into practice in your daily life.